か。Worldwide, welcome to VNN, Vortex Network News. I'm Aurora Light, your host. Thank you for being with us. I want to give a special hello to all the faithful listeners that we've had. And we want to thank you for your emails and your love and your light and support. Also, I want to make an announcement about some special things going on. Here in the United States, over in California, we're going to have the Bay Area UFO conference coming up the 12th and 13th and of September. So we hope you can make it by there. I'm going to be there. I'll have a table there. Michael Alejean, the host of the Cosmic Connection, will be doing readings there. I'll be doing health consultations. And also, William Alec is going to be showing his demos of gyroscopic precession and all kinds of interesting things he brings along with him. He has all these demos going on at the table that everybody who's scientific gets really into. So make sure you come by. There'll be lots of speakers there. And we're going to interview one of them today who is a very interesting fellow, and I'm going to see if he's here on the line with us. That's Frank Joseph Hoff. Hello, Frank. Are you here with us?
Yes, good morning from Seattle, Washington. It's raining
good
here
morning.
In Seattle today.
Well, we're over here in Arizona, the land of Oz, as we call it. And
yes,
how's your weather? I think we have your weather today. We've got the Seattle.
Yeah, I'm saying it's raining here in Seattle.
It's very gray out today, which is unusual for Arizona. But I think the Phoenix weather has interchanged with Seattle today. Do you have bright sunny skies today?
I'm not sure if you're hearing me, but it's raining in Seattle. It's one of the 9 months out of the year that it rains. It rains 9 months out of the year here in Seattle, but we've had a very nice summer.
That's right. Oh, so it's raining. I didn't hear you. No. So my brother told me when he lived there that his lawn was growing mold.
Well, that can happen, but this has been very nice this summer. It's been very hot up until about this point.
Yeah. So, Frank, would you like to give out your website for all the listeners so they can check it out while we're talking?
Sure. First of all, thank you very much for having me on the show, Aurora. I really appreciate
that. Well,
thank you
for being here.
And I look very much forward to being down at the Bay Area UFO Expo and meeting you when I come to the show. So I will be speaking about Atlantis and more specifically about a professor, Aricio Santos, who I was working with, and his amazing seminal discoveries with regards to the finding of the lost continent of Atlantis. In his book, Atlantis, The Lost Continent Finally Found, the definitive localization of Plato's lost civilization. And our website is simply www.atlan.org. In other words, www, first five letters of Atlantis, atlan.org. And there's also a link there to the Bay Area UFO Expo, which is www.TheBayAreaUFOExpo.com. Go ahead.
And is your Atlan website, is it an org or a com?
It's an org. It's atlan.org. in Oregon.
Okay. Okay, great.
Yeah, and what I'm going to be speaking about is, like I said, the discoveries of, actually his full name is Professor Alricio Nunes dos Santos. He was a Brazil. He's a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
But we can shorten his name to simply Professor Alricio Santos or Professor Santos. He was at a major university down in Brazil. His background is of a nuclear physicist and a nuclear engineer, and he also had free docency in physical chemistry. As he was describing to me, there's a level he could teach at any university of the world. He was a full tenured professor. And so there's quite a bit regarding his background and his scientific findings, but I want to let you know that he originally went out to disprove the whole notion of Atlantis. And he did this because he was a little actually sick and tired of a lot of amateur people and people that did not have the certain particular types of disciplinary backgrounds to really do a serious job with resolving the problem of Atlantis. And so that's what he did, is he ended up going out and refuting or looking to refute all these people coming up with this whole notion of Atlantis.
Well, you know, that's interesting to me because, first of all, I've been to Bimini in the Bahamas there, where they claim to have found a lot of things around Bimini that are Atlantean-oriented. And, you know, I talked to a number of people there who were native there about what they had seen and found. And Dr. Ray Brown, have you ever heard of him?
I may have, if I'm...
He did a number of shows on In Search Of and Discovery and stations, the channels for them. And he found, actually, when he was diving there off the coast of Bimini, a pyramid and retrieved a crystal from it that I've seen come alive, pulsate, and turn every color in the rainbow. And when a medium was holding it, she gave the message that the army of light was being formed, and when we were bright enough and light enough, that would be their signal upstairs to come and remove us from this planet for, I guess, evacuation purposes, so it can be... it seems that a lot of people feel that the planet is going to do some kind of shift before the Golden Age for a cleansing. And now, the Atlantis that he talks about, the gentleman who is going to speak, now say his name for me again. His first name is Ariessa?
No, his first name is Alricio.
Alricio, excuse me. Okay, Professor Alricio.
Right.
And has he studied the Atlantis around the Bimini area and around the Bahama area over there in the Bermuda Triangle area?
Well, yes, he's studied that in other areas as well. But I want to go back, because I really wanted to preface the whole show here, that we don't have any particular religious agenda or political agenda or social agenda or economic or any of that kind of agendas or ethnic or anything like that. We're not interested in pitting one political group or one religious group against the other. The only thing that we have an agenda for is getting the truth out, and mainly from a scientific standpoint. Professor Santos worked on this project for 30 years. About 10 years into it, he actually had to turn around 180 degrees on his thinking regarding actually doing the debunking of the whole Atlantis notion, because he actually found that it did exist. The only thing he did find out that he was wrong, that part he was wrong about. The part that he was right about is that it was not in the locations that you normally hear about, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And so that part he was right about, as far as a lot of amateurs doing it, it really didn't have a scientific background in doing this. And that's what I wanted to discuss a little bit more about his background so people can understand this, and it's really not so much a pseudoscience type of thing that we're here to unveil, but I hate to disappoint a few people about that, but we're really looking to do this from a highly scientific standpoint. Now, there is a mythology, and there are other things that come into all this to play, but that's where we're coming from.
Well, you know, the mystics have always known what science is about to find out. So, you know, there's a point coming together here of science and spirituality and metaphysics where they're all going to converge together here. So it's we live in a very interesting time where this is happening right before our very eyes. And I could name numerous instances of this happening. So, all right, so he's looking for the lost continent of Atlantis. Was there a specific reason why he chose this subject?
Well, it had a lot to do with he really didn't believe it actually existed, and he really thought a lot of people were coming up with this information and actually ripping off the public in doing so, because there'd be a big splash, in other words, about, you know, finding a location here or there, and some time would go by and nothing would come of it. And so he just really thought that people were doing the public an injustice by doing this. And actually, he found out later, actually, they were doing a more or less a disservice to the whole, you know, Atlantologist crowd that are serious researchers about this, okay? Because when it gets debunked, then it just kind of makes things worse for everybody else. And that's where he eventually came around to. I wanted to mention about his background and what he actually was doing besides the nuclear physics and engineering and that sort of thing. You see, what he did is he also dove into other disciplines such as archaeology, as well as mythology and linguistics. He also spoke several languages, I should tell you, and he also got into ethnology and also etymology. In other words, the understanding of what words are, how they're derived, and where they came from, and deciphering all that. He also got into occultism, not that he wanted to be an occultist, but in other words, to be able to understand this discipline in order to decipher the code of Atlantis. And so you really need to actually understand this particular discipline in order to do that and get that particular background. So this is the kind of things he was actually into, so he wouldn't be so easily fooled as so many have been in the past. And again, this has been going on for 11,600 years. That's the date given by Plato. Aurora?
Yes. I was familiar with the fact that Plato talked quite a bit about Atlantis. So
right.
I think that Atlantis, myself, what people call Atlantis, was also accompanied by another continent called Lemuria. And I'm sure you've heard of Lemuria.
Right.
And, you know, I think, in other words, that our planet has had very high civilizations in the past that were very highly advanced technologically, as well as probably interactive with extraterrestrials. So let's hear about his research and what he discovered.
Okay, well, what he's actually did is he did something different than what most people have done on this, and he didn't just try to look for a spot, more or less, and try to make the pieces fit in that spot. That's number one, okay? What he did is he actually reverse engineered it back to the true location. And what he actually discovered, and mainly, is that a lot of people were looking in the wrong haystack. Okay, it's really hard to find a needle in a haystack, but it's virtually impossible to find a needle in a haystack if you're looking in the wrong haystack or the wrong haystacks, okay? So what he was able to do is actually find out where the real true location or haystack is, okay? And then he could really pursue looking for that needle, which is actually Atlantis itself.
Well, you know, you're saying, that there people have been looking in the wrong location. Well, they've been finding evidence of Atlantis, or what we called an advanced civilization. We're just using the term Atlantis, really, because of a lack of a better term. But they have found a better, more evolved civilizations than we can imagine, evidence of those, the anomalies that have shown up around the world, strange things in rocks that have been buried for, you know, what it looks like thousands of years, even going back maybe further than 12,000 years ago. And evidence here in Phoenix, I don't know if you're aware of, when they were digging in Phoenix, Arizona, to put in a high-rise about 10, 15 years ago, as they were digging down to put in the parking lots, they excavated some ancient Egyptian-looking ruins. And also they had been finding that in the Grand Canyon as well. So there's evidence of an Atlantean or advanced civilization dating back thousands of years around the world, really. So where did he decide to focus on?
Okay. What I want to do is I want to actually clear up a lot of misunderstandings that have been going on for a long period of time. I am familiar with finding these so-called Egyptian artifacts in parts of this country and so on that mm-hmm. at least maybe look Egyptian, okay? But and that may very well be. What mm-hmm. the real problem of the whole notion of Atlantis was that everybody was looking in the Atlantic Ocean, or in and around that Atlantic Ocean as it's called today, okay? The problem was not called that back 11,600 years ago. In fact, it wasn't called that back several thousand years ago before that. You know, the name has got changed over time. And this is because a lot of the misunderstanding was going on. And the reason it's just been a problem is that the initiates or the ancients want to hold the true location secret because they were afraid after its demise that a lot of people would go in there and pillage and plunder that area because it was known as the Golden Peninsula. And the land of gold, and also other types of metals and other strategic types of natural resources. So they went out of their way to a large degree to hold this area secret from the rest of the world, and especially from people that would not, desecrate the area. So what happened is that the ocean got changed from a lot of different names in the past, but the main one is that Balboa did a discovery of the Pacific Ocean, but later on came along Ferdinand Magellan. And through the Straits of Magellan, when he saw the ocean, he noticed that the ocean looked very calm or passive. So he called it Pacifica from the Portuguese or Spanish language word called Pacifica, and that's from the verb or infinitive called Pacificar, means to be calm or passive. And so that name stuck, Pacifica, and so it got changed to Pacific Ocean because of that. By the way, it's the same kind of word or derivation as in pacifier, like a baby has, to be calm or passive. And that's where the name actually stuck. It was also many other Greek and Latin type names before that. So that's why this particular ocean was the ocean of the Atlanteans and was coterminous with the entire Atlantic Ocean at the time and extended all the way over to the Indian Ocean, which was the Arethian type ocean way back as well. But again, even these kind of names get changed. So what he found out is that this ocean extended all the ways over, not where it ends today. And that's why most people are looking really in the wrong spot. So he found that out as one reason. The other part of this is that he was able to decode even the word Atlantis because of the Greek he was able to decode on, and also the true language of the Atlanteans themselves that he found out.
And interesting.
He found out one thing in the word Atlantis is that it means actually the word antipodal. And the word antipodal actually means being situated on the opposite side, actually an opposite side of the world in this case.
Uh-huh.
It gets even better than that, and I was going to pull something down here.
Okay.
The actual coding of Atlantis itself, which actually comes from the Sanskrit word of Atala. And that
now,
word
I've
actually,
heard of Atala.
Right. And actually, it's known as the Hindu hell, for that matter. But it also plays into the word Atlas. And the part from Atlas is Tala, meaning to bear. But when you add an A on that, from the Greek, it means not to bear. Okay? In other words, Atlas, which is a personification of Atlantis, is the one who is unable to bear the weight of the skies. All right?
Ah.
But also Tala.
So in other words,
man.
He wasn't successful.
That's right, and so that was part of this whole story, and then that's the personification of it. But most importantly, Tala means earth land. Atala means no land, and more importantly, it actually means like a sunken land, okay? And it also means the foot soles or antipods from the other side of the earth. So what it is it's coded as, it is antipodal and also sunken land. So in other words, it is the sunken land on the opposite side of the world. That is why it's the location is where it is today, and that's where he was able to look because he found the right haystack, and then he had it as zero in. So this has all been coded by the initiates and even like maybe Plato himself, because even his life was in danger if he would, as a code of secrecy, he wasn't to reveal this or at least code it until it could be deciphered way down the line.
Okay, well, I thought Plato was referring to land over by Crete.
No, that's a misconception, and the reason a lot of that comes through is because of the Pillars of Hercules and things of that nature. And so that the Pillars of Hercules actually was really not where it is in Gibraltar. It's in a different location. It was just an archetype or a mirror image to fool the profane, okay? And some of the initiates and ancients were actually that did this. It was the Phoenicians in order to do this. But
okay.
Going back
so
to,
you're saying that what they found over by Crete, it dates back to the Phoenicians?
Well, any of this kind of thing is by the Phoenicians or the initiates just trying to mislead people to a wrong location, okay? Whether it was directly afterwards or even hundreds of years later, there's a number of people that were under the code of secrecy that did not want the true location to be located, and so they held it secret for a long period of time.
Okay.
And by making this a
and you
like
can't blame them, really.
What's that?
Because you know, history shows that you know that some of the most fantastic things that we've ever had on this planet have been destroyed by people with, you know, ill intent. And, for example, the Library of Alexander, one of the greatest losses that our world will ever know.
Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up, and that was a big loss, and they lost 750,000 scrolls there, and that was that would have probably...
That's why Cleopatra killed herself when she saw the Library of Alexander burning. She said, well, if the gods can't protect that, then I guess they're not going to protect me either, so I might as well, rather than be paraded up and down the streets of Rome, and God knows how I'd be treated, I might as well just take care of it myself. When she saw the Library of Alexander burning, that was it for her. So, yeah, so these scrolls that we lost, they held the secrets to so many things that we've been ignorant to all this time. What do you think of our chance of ever recovering some of this knowledge?
Well, I think then chances have just increased exponentially because of Professor Santos's work. I mean, really,
well, Professor Santos sounds like he's opened up quite a Pandora's box here for the historians.
Well, he was in, and he was probably one of the best scientific historical researchers in the world when he was alive. He did a great deal of work on this, but he did it scientifically and tested the science behind it, too. So, you know, I think we all owe a great, thanks to Professor Santos for doing this. And he told me many times before, by the way, that this is his gift to the world, to unleash this knowledge of where our ancient ancestors all came from. And by the way, it's not only that, but it is the actual cradle of civilization, not Sumeria, what we're talking about here. And it's not in the area of Sumeria where you hear about this on the news. That's just, again, an archetype. Or American.
Are you talking about what we know as the Middle East?
Correct. An area in and around, let's say, Iraq, in that area, maybe parts of Iran and some of the other areas in and around the Sumeria area, but mainly concerned with Iraq.
So what area would you call that if you wouldn't call that the Lemurian area?
Well, I would call it... I would not call it Sumeria. I mean, look, it's called like Sumeria by most people, but it's not Lemuria, and it's not Atlantis, and it's not the cradle of civilization, and it's not where civilization began.
Have you ever heard about U?
About what?
The continent called U.
Maybe vaguely myself, but I don't
That's
know.
That's also
that.
Known as Mu.
Oh, Mu. Okay, yeah.
First was Mu, and then was Mu.
Yeah, again, these names get changed, and Mu stands actually for mother, or motherland.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, I wanted to get back to what your question was and address and answer that, Aurora.
Okay, let's get back to it.
Yeah, location of Atlantis truly is. Where it is, it's in where the farthest west of the Pacific Ocean meets the farthest east of what basically the Indian Ocean is, okay? And actually, this goes even back later on to what Columbus was looking for, which was the East Indies. Not the West Indies. Okay, by the way, he also ran into the Americas. And that's why, actually, today, and even at that time, the Native Indians here, or the Native, I should say, Americans, were called Indians because kind of a misnomer. So,
because this was called West India?
No, again, because what he was looking for was the East Indies, and you may recall this from school. Columbus was looking for the East Indies.
Yeah, I do recall that.
Yeah, but what's known as the West Indies is like in the Caribbean area, okay? So that's why I'm pointing this out so it's not getting mistaken.
Okay.
He was also had some different types of maps, and he was doing work for basically the kings and queens of Europe, okay? So anyhow, because of this, he ran into the Americas. What he was really looking for was the East Indies, and that's why you've heard the saying where East meets West. And that is the area where actually Atlantis is. And what Professor Sanchez was able to do was actually reverse engineer it back into this area. And what he found time after time after time is that it ended up being in the area of the Java Sea and the South China Sea and the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, as they are all called today, and the Sunda Strait and the Sunda Shelf, all within that area. And
what did he discover over there that led him to this conclusion?
Well, what he found out is that that area ended up being Indonesia. That is the true location of Atlantis. And the reason is he was actually able to find that below the ocean was the actual lost continent. And furthermore, he found out is that this was all going on during the Pleistocene Ice Age. That's 11,600 years ago. Where in on Earth could a population of approximately 20 million people survive in the height of the Pleistocene Ice Age? And the only true location he was able to also figure that out, too, was in this area of Indonesia, which has a temperate climate on the equator, okay? By the way, it's the location is at 0 degrees latitude, 0 degrees. What he also found out
that's interesting.
That Greenwich, England, where you have Greenwich Mean Time, is where the 0 degrees meridian is now, currently. But it used to be over Atlantis, over Java, as we see today, okay? So it actually was at 0 degrees latitude and 0 degrees longitude. It's, by the way, also, although Japan has it on their flag, Japan is known as the land of the rising sun.
Now, I have to stop here and ask a question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
How is the longitude and the latitude, how's that configured?
Well,
what is measured to determine that?
Yeah, if you take a look on the globe, you will see that the latitude goes right through Atlantis, okay, Indonesia. That's one thing. Just take a look on the globe. You'll see it goes right through it.
Well, I mean, what is measured to determine where the longitude and latitudes are? It's a scientific question I don't know the answer to. I was wondering if you did.
I don't know exactly, you know, all the determinants for mapping it all out. I'm not like a, you know.
Yeah, I was just really curious what method they used to determine the longitude and latitude points on the planet.
Yeah, I'm not really a cartographer, but I have a feeling that some of this was because of the imperialism at the time of England, okay, wanting to have the actual day start there, okay?
I see. I wondered because I figured there has to be some kind of governing factors in play.
Yeah, but, you know, look at... the international dateline is also over in that area, not too far, if you notice on a map that it's in that area as well. As I mentioned before, that Japan was known as, I mean, as today is known as the land of the rising sun. They have a sun on their flag, a sun and then white background. But the true location of the land of the rising sun is actually Indonesian Atlantis, where the day began and the day ended. Okay. That's another thing he found out. But the other thing he found out to really conclude this is that he was able to draw a map of the ocean underneath the land underneath the ocean of the Java Sea and the South China Sea and the Indian Ocean and so on. And there's the actual continent is below there. That and that was later on verified by that National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration by satellite photo that was not available in Hedra, his own map, but later on became available. And that fit like a glove to what he basically came out with. It was also verified for another entirely different source, which is a Dr. Voorhees from the Field Museum in Chicago. And when he did a very detailed geographical study of the area and came up with the same thing as well. And so we have the infrared space-by satellites. We have the one by Dr. Voorhees. We have the one by Professor Santos. And we also have another one that's in National Geographic magazine as well that lays this out, too. And they all...
All right, now when you say we have, you have what exactly?
A map showing that...
A sonar-type map? Sonar-type map?
And continent, yes, of Atlantis underneath the ocean, as I just described. And it's also a copy of that.
So it shows up
the
sonar readings? Or have they gone down to it and actually been able to, you know, touch, feel, see up close?
That was Dr. Voorhees' work, and the space satellite photo was an infrared one. And another one that's on our website was done by Professor Santos. And another one was also done, like you're saying, in addition by what was back and projected by National Geographic during the Pleistocene Ice Age. And they all...
Fascinating, really fascinating. We're going to have to take a short little break here, but when we come back, we'll be talking some more to Frank Joseph Hoff, and his website is atlan.org. So check it out, folks, and we'll be right back after this short break. I don't hear my music. Maybe Bill. There we go. All right, we're going to break, folks. We'll be right back.
Hello everyone, this is Bill Alec. In this new book that just premiered at the Academy of Arts and Sciences in Hollywood, California, delves into our connection with human-appearing extraterrestrials. In Prepare for the Landings, authors Michael Elejon and Aurora Light go into their long-standing contacts and what's in store for all of us here on planet Earth. In Prepare for the Landings, you will learn why this planet has been quarantined and how the ET connection to the Bible and other ancient writings has been deliberately suppressed. Go to prepareforthelandings.com and prepare yourself for the coming shift of the ages taking place right now. That's prepareforthelandings.com. Get your copy today and don't be left behind. Go to prepareforthelandings.com.
We are Dennis
and Alice Jackson, Twin Soul, Spiritual Mediums.
Bringing you a safe place to discuss anything you've ever wondered about your connection between this side and the other side. Reconnecting with loved ones and friends who've crossed over to the other side, bringing us all together again.
Messages from beyond.
This is a live call-in show.
Saturdays at 7 p.m.
Thursday nights at 8 Pacific.
From the beginning of time, man has sought always to achieve more. And finally, we have AchieveRadio.com. the positive side of broadcasting.
Atlan.com, and he is going to be one of the presenters at the Bay Area UFO conference. So you can Google that, Bay Area UFO Expo, and that's going to be the 12th and 13th of September. So see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun, and a lot of people are going to be there. Usually, I think Victoria usually has about 1,200 people come. It's quite an array of people from all over who are interested in the subject of extraterrestrial contact and UFOs. So I'd like to know, Frank, you know, I'd like to get back to the photographs and the evidence that has been found. Could we go back and touch on that some more?
Yes, that'd be fine. I wanted to clear something up. Actually, our website is not a .com. You actually said .com, Aurora, but it's actually atlan.org. It's a .org. It's easy to get that mixed up.
Org, O-R-G, right?
Right. So several things. If people can go up to www.atlan.org, there's a link from there over to the Bay Area UFO Expo coming up in Santa Clara. I will be speaking on, actually the first speaker up, on September 12th at 8 a.m., where I'll be giving a lecture about Atlantis, but also I will be doing a workshop as well. In the workshop, I'll be doing a PowerPoint presentation on that, and I'll be laying out this information, the photographs from all the different sources, including Professor Santos or Dr. Santos' original one, as well as the NOAA space satellite one, and the one from National Geographic, and I'll point out exactly where you can find that. So, as well, and then also the Dr. Boris ones too. So that'll all be there, as well as a lot of other information I'll be presenting, so you can clearly see this for yourselves. And actually, what I'm really like to do is clear up a lot of the misunderstandings that's been going on for a very long period of time. And Professor Santos really wanted to take this out of the metaphysical or pseudo-type science thought as a taboo-type subject and actually make it a scientific discipline. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to change that around. That's what my plan here to do.
Well, you know, I resent, you know, a little bit about the metaphysical being kind of like saying that, oh, metaphysical. Well, metaphysics does include science. It's science, religion, and philosophy combined.
Well, look,
just to make that clear. So we're not above science.
Yeah,
and we incorporate science into metaphysics. The metaphysics means the physical and the beyond. That's what the word means. And, all right. So now, getting back to some of this evidence, and now your workshop. You didn't mention when your workshop's going to be. When is your workshop going to be?
Okay, the workshop follows the 45-minute lecture that starts at 8 a.m., but the workshop starts at 9 a.m. on, again, September 12th.
Okay, great. Okay, and how long of a workshop is that going to be?
That's
a 90-minute one?
Okay, 90 minutes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I hope everyone can make it, because it sounds really fascinating. I hope to be there myself. So, getting back to some of this evidence that has shown up through some of the modern technology that we have today, that's going to be revealing a lot what saints and sages philosophers down through the ages have spoken of. And a lot will be revealed and a lot will be confirmed, I think. And as far as looking in the wrong place for Atlantis, what do you think that people are discovering in these so-called wrong places?
Well, here's a couple of things I wanted to clear up also. I want to let you know also and your listeners how it's actually destroyed, and also that goes back to Lemurian Atlantis as well.
Okay, let's hear it.
Atlantis is. So I think this will all come together here, what I'm about
okay.
to do.
All right, well, we only have a few minutes left, so let's try and tie that in to it. I'd love to hear how what the theory is that you feel is correct on how it was destroyed.
Right. First of all, the original motherland, or Lemurian Atlantis, goes back 75,000 years, okay, and more. Actually, it was destroyed in most part, not totally, but in most part, by the Toba volcano that went off 75,000 years ago, the Toba volcano in the most volcanically active area probably in the world. So that originally destroyed the motherland to a large degree at, again, 75,000 BP. And this is scientifically documented. It's probably one of the biggest cataclysms ever that take place on the face.
Now, that took place in the Pacific Ocean, am I correct?
This took place over in the Pacific, as it's called today, or let's say the Indian Ocean or the South China Sea, again, Indonesia.
Okay.
It's also it's Mount Dempo, and it's a caldera is what it actually is today, Indonesia.
Okay. That's where the volcano was?
I'll show that map. I'll show a map of that, too, when I'm at the expo, by the way.
Okay, so that's the volcano was located over there?
Right. Now, that's one, okay? And that was really the first Atlantis, okay? And what actually happened from that is that they actually had to reassemble, let's say, after for 63,000 years when the second volcano went off at 11,600 BP or before present, and that was the Krakatoa volcano, okay? And by the way, instead of Gibraltar or the Pillars of Hercules being over in the area of Gibraltar, they're actually at the Sunda Strait. The Pillars of Hercules known are actually the Krakatoa volcano and the Toba volcano. Those were the Pillars of Hercules at the Sunda Strait. Those are the true Pillars of Hercules. And so that volcano went off, basically destroying the rest of Atlantis, the Atlantis proper, the advanced civilization. By the way, there was actually kind of a third Atlantis, and some of the people from the Atlanteans, that is, from the Toba volcano originally went to this area until they rebuilt, and that's they moved into the Indus Valley area. It's the Indus Valley civilization in India, and the word Indonesia actually stands for Isles or Islands of India, by the way. So what happened is after even the Krakatoa volcano went off, on the second Atlantis, they had to migrate back there again until it got flooded out in approximately 3102 BC, and that's when they dispersed, or a diaspora, into Samaria and other parts of Europe, as well as going down into, because of the equatorial currents, into Peru and Ecuador. So this all took place, and they made it even with the Mayans and the Aztecs and Incas and those civilizations. And so this, the word actually in Mayan is Tolan, which actually means, it stands for Atlantis. So because of all this explosion and everything, this caused the problem. And it's not that Atlantis is sunk. It's actually at sea levels rose because it ended the Pleistocene Ice Age. It did two things. Number one, the original explosion sent a tsunami up like we saw on December 26th in the Indonesian area. But instead of 15 meters high, it went up 1,500 meters high. That's approximately a mile high. And that was what the initial flood that came in, known as the Universal Flood or the Deluge, and that later on receded, okay? By the way, it's an optical illusion. It's not that Atlantis sunk. It's that sea level rose. And they rose initially first to wipe out the continent, later on receded. Then the Pleistocene Ice Age ended up raising the sea levels all around the world, and especially in that shallow area, from 130 to 150 meters. So this is what went on. Again, Atlantis didn't sink on the initial one. It was the sea levels rose, and it's an optical illusion. You could look out, and it appeared that Atlantis actually sunk. So that was a misunderstanding, and that's why I also wanted to clear that up as well. You follow me?
I see. That's interesting. Now, I want to ask you a question. How do you know that that area wasn't Lemuria?
It was. It was the same in one. Madame Lebowski and a lot and other people got into this, went and kind of...
I love Rudolf Steiner, by the way. I think he wrote a fabulous book on Atlantis and Lemuria.
Yeah, but they're one and the same. It ended up having to do with the Toba and Krakatoa volcano. They said there was an Atlantis or a Lemurian island in the Central Pacific, which there never was. But this kind of thing kind of stuck for a while until it later on got dismissed. But it never was there. It was in the area where I'm standing, and Lemurian Atlantis, which is the motherland, got transplanted by later on the sun, or less, more or less the fatherland. And then eventually they had to go into the Indus Valley area on both of them until that got flooded out as well, partly to do because it's a normal flood, but also the ending of Pleistocene Ice Age. And that's the reason why that the upper latitudes of the Earth at the time could not be inhabitable by a population of 20 million. It had to be at the equator or below, and that's why they also went to South America. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you're so fascinating. I want to thank you so much. The time has just flown by. There's so much more I'd like to talk about. Would you come back again sometime so we can talk some more about this?
I invite you to come to the lecture and the workshop and start to see this, because there's just been so much misinformation, and that's why the professor had to get after that to really, you know. And
there's so many questions that you've raised in my mind, and I'm sure in the mind of our listeners. So I hope you can make it to Bay Area UFO Expo, and you can check it out on atlan.org.
And thank you for
find out more information. Please come to our website as well, which is prepareforthelandings.com. And if you're going to be in the Sedona area and you're looking, or you would like to travel there for have a nice spiritual experience, we're inviting you all to come to Sedona and experience a vortex tour along with a UFO Skywatch, get a reading from Michael, and get plugged into your life mission and purpose on a more conscious level. As well as, you know, he touches on some of the past lives you've had that are relevant to who you are, why you're here now. And I want to thank our guest again, Dr. Frank Joseph Hoff. And thank you for sharing so much with us today. And it was really fascinating to all of our listeners and myself, and I'm sure you've raised a lot more questions than we ever imagined here. So it's very interesting. We can look forward to seeing one another there in San Francisco. So that's the only place where you can come together with other people of like mind and spirit, is to go to these conferences and these, you know, that are taking place here and there. And, you know, that's a special time for us all to come together. So thank you again for being with me. I'm Aurora Light, and you're listening to Vortex Network News. Please stay tuned for Progressive Tech Hour with William Alec. He always has fascinating guests on anti-gravity and free matter, all free energy, all kinds of interesting things such as that.
Hello, everyone. This is Bill Alec, and I'd like to say a few words today about channelforthemasters.com. Michael Elejon provides a direct voice channel to such entities as Ashtar, Archangel Michael, Saint Germain, and many others. He also provides full life readings for the star people and the light workers. And his website again is channelforthemasters.com. And I know Michael's been doing this work now for over 30 years. And again, his website is channelforthemasters.com.
Caddy, Winchester here. You know, back in the 1870s, there weren't much book learning. Matter of fact, if you could read, you were considered right educated. And if you had any books, you were always welcome at many a campfire. Through books, we've met the kings and queens of Europe, sought out the mysteries of the Orient, followed on the conquests of the Romans and the Greeks, and sailed the seven seas. Reading opened our minds to places and ideas we'd never dreamed of. But today, people don't seem to read much anymore, especially the youngsters. And then they go and tell you they're bored because there ain't nothing good on TV. Well, now let me tell you, that's one sorry excuse. So go on, do something adventurous. Wake up to the wonders of this world and beyond. Read, for the fun of it. You might just find a whole new universe out there. Your mind. This is Winchester, and I thank you.